this is not impeachable conduct, what is?
The U.S. president is the target of public impeachment proceedings. This is Thursday, the 14th of November, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, violence finds a new location in Hong Kong. It is that city's universities. Vaping is hitting a South Asian nation very hard indeed. And wildfires threaten mass destruction in Australia. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. Historic impeachment hearings targeting U.S. President Donald Trump opened Wednesday in Washington, with key lawmakers offering sharply contradictory views whether Trump abused his office to help himself politically. Congressman Adam Schiff, the leader of the Democratic effort to impeach Trump, accused the president in his opening statement of pressuring Ukraine to open an investigation on one of his chief 2020 Democratic challengers, former Vice President Joe Biden, before Trump would release $391 million in U.S. military aid to Kiev wanted to help it fight pro-Russian separatists in the eastern part of the country.
If we find that the President of the United States abused his power and invited foreign interference in our elections, or if he sought to condition, coerce, extort, or bribe an ally into conducting investigations to aid his reelection campaign and did so by withholding official acts, a White House meeting, or hundreds of millions of dollars of needed military aid, must we simply get over it? Is this what Americans should now expect from their president? If this is not impeachable conduct, what is? Does the oath of office itself, requiring that our laws be faithfully executed, that our president defend a constitution that balances the powers of its branches, setting ambition against ambition so we become no monarchy, still have meaning? These are the questions we must ask and answer, without rancor if we can, without delay regardless, and without party favor, and without prejudice if we are true to our responsibilities.
VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson joins us in our Washington studios. Well, Catherine, was the proceeding free from rancor and prejudice?
Is any proceeding in the U.S. Congress ever free of that?
Not that one, neither one of us has ever seen, I don't think.
So. That's very true.
Well, you know, how were the possible charges against President Trump spelled out by the majority Democrats in the House of Representatives today?
Well, you know, you heard from Adam Schiff just then in his opening statement, opening that House Intelligence Committee hearing, the first public hearing of the impeachment inquiry. And what he was trying to do in that opening statement was really to separate himself from the partisan politics of this entire debate and say that House Democrats are taking their constitutional responsibility very seriously. They're saying that they're considering these very serious questions of whether or not the president abused the power of his office and what that means for the American people and what they expect from the office of the presidency. Those are some very key questions that we have to ask about American democracy. But as with many things here in Washington, Republicans and Democrats see that abuse of power very, very differently.
So let me ask you about how the Republicans are seeing it. And with all of the testimony that went on today, it seems to be very difficult to combat this.
Well, it is hard because you've got this summary of the July 25th phone call between President Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky. And both sides see that phone call very, very differently. We've heard President Trump call it a perfect phone call. Republicans point to the fact that President Trump is concerned about addressing corruption. That is something that he ran on during his campaign, drain the swamp. They say that he was just merely doing his duty and that, you know, look, in the end, Ukraine got that $400 million of congressionally approved aid. The Ukrainian president did not do anything to further this supposed investigation into Trump's political rival, Joe Biden. There's no fire there. And Democrats, they say, are trying to make something out of nothing.
Well, you know, you have the whole thing about what there is there. But just very briefly, as you can, tell us what the testimony said and where did the hearings go from here?
So we heard from two State Department diplomats who told House lawmakers that they were concerned that Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, had created a kind of a secondary foreign policy channel for the U.S. that was not a normal way of operating, and that that secondary channel was created to advance the president's personal political interests.
Oh, boy. So what happens now as far as timing of these things? When do you have to go back on the Hill, take the walk down the street to the Hill and cover this again?
Well, I basically will be living on the Hill for the next week. And that's because we have hearings for the next 8 days, almost every single day, with witnesses who have already testified behind closed doors for the committee. Now they'll be out in public laying out this bigger picture for the American people.
VOA Congressional Correspondent Catherine Gibson with us on VOA Asia. As always, it is wonderful speaking with you, and thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. North Korea intensified its demand Wednesday that the United States take steps by the end of this year to normalize relations, saying it's out of patience with Washington. Police say a suicide bombing at a busy police station on Sumatra, Indonesia, injured at least 6 people. Police said the attacker detonated his explosives and died after being confronted by officers, injuring at least 4 officers and 2 civilians. Police say a car bomb exploded in the Afghan capital of Kabul Wednesday, killing at least 12 people and wounding about 20 others, including children. And the United Nations and call on Cambodia to repeal its decision criminalizing surrogacy. This is VOA Asia. In Hong Kong, clashes between protesters and riot police continued overnight at the Chinese Hong Kong University, extending one of the more violent stretches in the 5 months of demonstrations in China's semi-autonomous territory. Hong Kong police say they raided a university campus to make arrests because they strongly suspected it was being used to make gasoline bombs to attack police. Police have been criticized for entering the Chinese University of Hong Kong Tuesday, which some called an attack on higher education and a sign of deteriorating relations between police and the public. Police spokesman Say Chung Chung said at a briefing Wednesday that the action was taken after riot police guarding a pedestrian bridge next to the campus came under repeated attack. He questioned how protesters and students could obtain hundreds of gasoline bombs and deploy them quickly in the area, saying it raised strong suspicions that they had been assembled there. Nowhere in Hong Kong is lawless land, Say said, adding that police would pursue lawbreakers wherever they seek refuge. No excuse, no political motives, he said, can justify or glorify this madness. Police said across Hong Kong Tuesday they fired 1,567 tear gas canisters, 1,312 rubber bullets, and 380 beanbag rounds. Total of 142 people were arrested. 10 people were taken to hospitals with injuries. VOA International Edition host Steve Miller spoke Wednesday with Hong Kong-based journalist Justin Solomon about the current situation in Hong Kong, one that is seeing more frequent protest demonstrations.
People are describing these weekday protests as a battlefield, a battleground on universities' campuses. How accurate of a description is that?
At times, I think that's a pretty accurate description, although I think it's important to say it's not just university campuses. And we saw for the third day in a row protests in the streets of Hong Kong, including, once again, central Hong Kong in the business district during lunch hour, which, as you know, is like the Wall Street of Hong Kong. It's where all of the businesses are, where all of the banks are. And to have these protests during the weekday impact all of these folks that are out during their lunch hour is quite incredible. And yes, at times it is a war zone.
How widespread are these protests? Is it just the universities and these isolated incidents in the CBD, or is it more widespread than that?
It's definitely more widespread than that. However, it is in pockets. Hong Kong, although a small island, it is large, which I know is a contradiction, but there are ways where if you don't necessarily want to be near these protests, you don't necessarily have to be near them. So although they are in multiple pockets throughout, it's not everywhere, and there are ways to avoid them.
As these protests continue, what are the authorities in Hong Kong going to do? I understand that they have announced plans to close some schools.
Yeah, so tomorrow, all of Hong Kong schools are going to be closed. We're talking elementary school and high school level. And, you know, it goes to this fact that we saw photographs circulating today of school children in school uniforms being stopped on the way to school this morning by riot police, having their IDs checked and their bags checked to make sure they're not protesters. And I think those images were very frightening for parents, and of course, not a good look for the government. And they decided to call off schools tomorrow. And in addition, you had mentioned what's going on university campuses, and that has taken things to a whole nother level here when it comes to violence, and it's where we've seen some of the most violent acts since these protests started 6 months ago. So a handful of universities have already announced that they're just going to end semesters early and pick up classes again early next year. They find it's just not safe for their students. They have a lot of students that are asking to leave, especially Chinese students who are saying, I don't feel comfortable here in Hong Kong right now. I'd like to go back home. And so they're just calling off classes.
With the uptick in the number of demonstrations that they're having and the escalation of violence, is there any fatigue setting in on Hong Kong residents who are directly affected by the weekday skirmishes with authorities or the use of tear gas, say, in the CBD?
That's a really good question, and it is. It is impacting regular people now. And for the first time, you're starting to hear people at coffee shops say things like, did you smell the tear gas? Wow, tear gas really burns. And regular people in suits. And whether or not they're getting tired of the protests is sort of still to be determined, I think. But now they're being impacted by it. Businesses are shutting early. Office workers are being told to go home before it gets too violent. The malls are closing at lunchtime. So it's now impacting regular people.
Justin Solomon reports out of Hong Kong. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Justin Solomon speaking with VOA Steve Miller. Now, China's foreign ministry has again warned the United States not to interfere with Hong Kong's affairs, saying the city is part of China. Ministry spokesman Zheng Shuang said at a daily briefing Wednesday that members of the U.S. Senate should stop trying to promote bills on human rights or democracy in Hong Kong. He said, I wanted to reiterate that Hong Kong is China's Hong Kong. Hong Kong affairs are purely China's internal affairs and cannot be interfered with by any external forces. 5 months of anti-government protests in Hong Kong have grown increasingly violent. Happening now in Asia, China's African swine fever outbreak is far more severe than previously thought, and the full impact of the disease on animal feed producers has yet to be realized, according to U.S. agribusiness company Archer Daniels Midland Company on Wednesday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us. Over the past couple of years, many smokers have made the switch to electronic cigarettes and what's being called vaping. The appeal is the idea that vapers get all the benefits from smoking cigarettes without the tar and the ash. However, according to U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, at least 37 deaths have been connected to vaping in the United States. VOA's Gaiti Ara-Anas reports from Islamabad on the impact of vaping in Pakistan.
24-year-old Talha made the switch to e-cigarettes last year, thinking it would help him stop smoking cigarettes. But vaping quickly became a nightmare for him, as he is now dealing with oral cuts and minor damage in his lungs.
Honestly, I just wanted to come across as a cool guy, but over the time, I realized my mouth was running dry, my throat was irritated. I started to develop oral cuts. I stopped using e-cigarettes and vapes when I started to have serious pain in my chest.
Health experts warn the idea that e-cigarettes are a healthier alternative to regular smoking is a misconception. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed at least 37 deaths and more than 1,800 lung injuries are linked to e-cigarettes. Investigators are looking into whether chemicals used in vaping may be to blame. Experts in Pakistan add, as long as nicotine present, vaping is a health hazard.
The worst cases I am seeing are that of mouth ulcers and severe throat infections that can become cancerous any minute.
While Pakistan has been banning tobacco advertisements on TV, print media and other platforms since 2005, it is reported that Pakistan is leading its neighboring South Asian countries in cigarette consumption. However, these regulations do not yet apply to vaping.
We all know smoking cigarettes is not okay, may it be e-cigarettes or otherwise. But we have to watch these developments closely. We have initiated a study into this, too, so we can know the extent of the damage these alternates can cause. We hope to bring the legislation by the end of November.
In the United States, 13 states have banned usage of e-cigarettes in public areas. Pakistan might soon introduce its own legislation to tackle vaping. Talha and others urge the government start awareness campaigns to warn of the health risks. Githi Aranis, VOA News, Islamabad.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. India's top court censured the federal government there for its inaction in fighting pollution as poisonous smog choked the streets of the capital, New Delhi, forcing schools to shut and half of the vehicles to be banned from the streets. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Tens of thousands of Australians took shelter Tuesday after authorities warned it was too late for them to leave their homes as bushfires raged across the vast area of that country's east coast. Reuters correspondent Michelle Hennessy has more on that.
The sky has turned orange in Australia, where scores of wildfires have brought parts of the country under a state of emergency. Millions are now bracing for the worst blazes in at least a decade. Officials said fires in two locations had become so severe that it was too late for people caught up in them to flee. Some residents have likened the scenes to an apocalypse or hell on earth. Lawmakers and firefighters have said they are prepared, but warned there's only so much they can do as they take on soaring heat and high winds. Bushfires are by no means uncommon in Australia, but the ferocity of these blazes that have started earlier than previous years have taken many by surprise. As the deadly fires force people out of their homes, a climate debate is taking hold in government. Prime Minister Scott Morrison has declined to say whether the fires were brought on by climate change. The Deputy PM accused climate activists of politicising a tragedy. But the Mayor of Glen Innes, a town ravaged by the fires, has called on the government to listen to science.
It's not a political thing. It's a scientific fact that we are going through climate change. We are so dry in this country. We haven't had rain for years in some places. And to deny climate change is, to me, a very ill-informed and uneducated way of looking at things.
Hundreds of schools and colleges were closed on Tuesday, and Sydney, one of Australia's most iconic cities, came under a catastrophic danger warning for the first time in a decade. 70 blazes are now tearing through states, with new ones still igniting.
That's Reuters correspondent Michelle Hennessy. This news break now from VOA Asia. Malaysia Airlines said Wednesday it had barred veteran Cambodian opposition figure Sam Rainsy from a flight from Kuala Lumpur to the Indonesian capital of Jakarta on the instruction of Indonesian authorities. Stay with us. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Over two decades, the Trump International Hotel and Towers have been a recognizable New York City landmark with its golden facade and luxury interiors. But that look and branding has been getting a makeover. Vladimir Lensky has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
In 2019, the Trump name was removed from the last of the large complexes of luxury residence buildings on Riverside Boulevard. Residents also asked to have the golden coating removed from the front building entrances. The now former Trump Hotel in Soho also had to go through rebranding. It was struggling to survive, in part because of the political baggage now surrounding the Trump name.
We're well known to be a democratic state. I think the sentiment towards his politics has been very clear in all blue states. And as a result, it has really caused a little bit of damage to his brand.
Despite bearing the president's name, these buildings, however, don't belong to Donald Trump. He's the owner of just 9 towers in Manhattan. According to the real estate website Street Easy, there are 18 apartments for sale at the Trump International skyscraper near Central Park. In 2018, 12 apartments were purchased in his other building, the Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue, and every one of them was sold for 15 to 20% less than the original purchase price. But according to investment experts, that doesn't mean that Trump buildings aren't making money.
You hear on the streets that they are losing money, that they're closing shops, that they're not able to do their own businesses. But the numbers speak differently, right? From having research and read about their financials, they actually have been doing really well.
Though a complex of towers on Riverside Boulevard has gone through rebranding and dropped the president's last name in its name, it is still the Trump Organization that does all the maintenance, and residents pay the same organization they have been for years. The company, it seems, has learned the lesson and is changing its strategy, minimizing, quite literally, the president's name, like on the side of the famous Central Park ice rink.
The brand strategy is not about just the logo. I think that's more of a, you know, here I am, look at me. Shrinking may have helped, but it's such a tourist attraction that I don't think anybody's going to stop going to it. His own building, where he resides, if you walk by it, you'll see hundreds of people every day taking pictures in front of it. Is that a good sign or is that a bad sign?
Chief Investment Officer Marco Soriano believes that politics and economics go through development cycles. And even though at the moment the Trump brand is going through a rough patch, it will pass.
But I think it's a cyclical thing. I don't think it's something that's going to affect him for life. I think his children, which all of them have MBAs, should come up with a corporate strategy that will help them get out of that hole. I mean, part of the corporate strategy that I think his company is probably already doing, like shrinking the logo, not being too public to the eye, it's a good move. And now it's all about communications, communicating to the people the right message.
However, for now, the Trump name, at least in New York, isn't doing his real estate empire any favors. For Vladimir Lensky in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Reiterating our top story, two U.S. diplomats told the impeachment investigation targeting U.S. President Donald Trump on Wednesday that he created an irregular channel to deal with Ukraine, headed by his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, in hopes of getting Kyiv to open investigations to help Trump politically. The State Department officials who oversee Ukraine affairs said that over time they came to realize that Giuliani was acting at Trump's behest outside normal State Department guidelines. Thank you for being with us. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, and take VOA Asia with you. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and the VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hyung, Afra, and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day ahead.